These guys have earnings coming up next week.
Then you got the labor. I mean, the labor here is tremendous. I mean,
15.3% is the number, which is alarming.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Welcome to the Allstate Skyline Studios. Steve Bertrand on this Tuesday afternoon. It's pretty gloomy out there, but a big step up from yesterday, I guess. We're going to talk a little bit later in the program with a food blogger who actually on this Giving Tuesday is beginning. I don't know if she started or not. She had hoped to start it in the fall, but she was going to cook at a soup kitchen. She was going to start sort of a startup soup kitchen in West Rogers Park. So we'll check in with her a little bit later. You know, we talk a lot about the tax law and how the charitable contributions weren't impacted, but other state and local tax write-offs were, the SALT, I think they're called. Well, there's a way to give to charities that might help to alleviate some of that pain. So we will kick that around in the second half hour as well. Kim Gordon is in the newsroom. And Kim, the Cyber Monday numbers were even bigger
record
than they were expected, $7.9
right? $7.9 billion.
I think we had the guys on from Adobe a couple of weeks ago, and they were saying 7.8. So 7.9 billion. That's not too shabby.
No, it's not.
Did you do any shopping?
I did a little bit. You know, it's funny because I was looking around and I didn't see a lot of deals. I guess I don't know how to look for deals.
Right.
Everything I was looking for was either the same price, maybe you got free shipping or something like that, but I didn't really find anything major. What about you?
I bought a few things, and as in keeping with the season, most of my shopping so far has been for myself. And I actually subscribe to Cranes. You know, we talk to the guys from Cranes all the time, and I don't have my own subscription, and it was like 50% off. So
that's a good deal. I meant to do this yesterday. There's a baking magazine that I wanted to subscribe to, and they had a deal 20 off, and I forgot to do it, but.
Well, you know, the thing is, I don't think that the date is that significant anymore.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Now they're calling it Cyber Week because Amazon, Walmart, all the big online retailers are having deals for the whole week. So
right.
I think, you know, and I had a ton of emails this morning when I woke up from, you know, a million different stores saying we're extending Cyber Monday today. So I think that probably chances are if you're looking for a deal, you could probably still find it.
So the good news is the Black Friday shopping, as I recall, was above what they were expecting, or at any rate, it was very good. Cyber Monday's done very well. I think a lot of the, because I'd like to go shopping on the Friday after Thanksgiving. I know it's kind of crazy.
It's a tradition.
It's kind of a tradition, and it is usually when I buy all my clothes, so I only wear wool pants in the summer. But it's just the time for me to stock up. So, yeah, I don't mind. We went to Northbrook Court, not crowded.
I was there yesterday. You could have, like, it was dead.
Right. It's too bad. And then we went out to Deer Park Center, which advertises on the station, and they were packed. So it was a good time out there. But that's kind of what I do in the days after.
You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens on Giving Tuesday today, because there were such record numbers of people spending money on Black Friday, Cyber Monday.
Right.
Will they keep their wallets open, or have they already spent their money and now don't have the extra money to give to a charity?
That's a good question.
We'll see.
And then the other question is, you know, how it's going to turn out for charities in general this year, because of a lot of people aren't going to be itemizing their taxes. The standard deduction is up dramatically for people, and so the incentive to itemize for your taxes is diminished. A lot of times people give to charities in an effort to cut down on their tax liability, so that could have an impact too, so we'll follow that. All right, Kim Gordon, stay in the newsroom. We'll check in with you in just a few minutes with the news headlines.
Sounds good.
And a little bit after the headlines, when we come back, we're going to talk to the senior editor of the Almanac, the World Almanac 2019. It comes out on December 4th. I love the World Almanac. I love thumbing through it. And I say that, but I haven't in a long, long time. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. On a phone line now is Sarah Jansen, the senior editor of the World Almanac. Sarah, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you so much for having me.
I have to tell you, I am a big fan, because for every year when I got to the age when my grandmother didn't know what to buy me for Christmas, she gave me the World Almanac, and I still have many of them back from the 80s and 90s. It was a great gift, and it's a great remembrance of my grandmother.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I used to love getting them as a Christmas gift, too, and now I get the opportunity to actually be the person gifting them at Christmas, so it's kind of a come full circle on my end.
Well, you don't show up at a Christmas party with 15 packages all wrapped identically, do you, and give away the ornament?
No, I'm not that person. Only the people who ask for them.
So, you know, we're in this incredibly disruptive time where things have changed, and you look at the World Almanac that's been around for 150 years or more. So the big question is, how do you survive? How is it that you're still here?
You know, it's a challenge for sure. The almanac game is not what it used to be, because we used to have a lot of other company publishing every year. And now the World Almanac is one of the last annual publications on the market. And the reason we've been able to stay around is that we're constantly changing. We're constantly adding new statistics, new facts that we think people are going to be really interested in. And also, you know, looking at what's going on in the world and saying, what's relevant in the upcoming year? What do we think people are going to have even more questions about in 2019 and 2020? So they can always go to the book and find ever-changing, ever-evolving facts.
Yeah, I think of the Encyclopedia Britannica, right, which has gone to completely online. That's not the case here. You can still hold the World Almanac every year. But I would imagine there's a digital version as well.
Oh, absolutely. So you can find us at worldalmanac.com with a lot of extra daily information, you know, today in history, that kind of thing.
Right.
But we also have a really great site for schools and libraries to subscribe to that adds even more information for researchers.
So what is the percentage? I mean, is the majority of your almanac still sold in book form, or how does that break down?
It really depends on the year, and a lot of it because we do have a lot of schools, like I said, schools and libraries, institutional subscribers, we call them. So it really depends on the year, on the budgets of those institutions. We still sell over 120,000 copies every year, so it's nothing to sneeze at, certainly. But things definitely have been changing and shifting in the other direction, and we're just, you know, keeping up with it.
And aside from the institutions, I mean, who's your sort of P1? Who's your buyer?
You know what? We actually think that pretty much anyone could buy the almanac. We do a lot of our sales, most of our sales, before the holiday season. It's a really great, you know, catch-all gift for a lot of different types of people. But, you know, anyone who has a question basically could be interested in the World Almanac, anyone who has a curiosity about the world, because you're going to flip to a random page and find something you might be interested
in. Well, that's what I liked. You could just pick it up and find something. You'd not necessarily be searching for an answer, maybe be presented with an answer instead, something that you weren't necessarily curious about before you opened the book. I know you do the top stories and all of that. I mean, before we get to that, you've got to be a pretty nimble staff, too, because you've got election coverage in here. Now, clearly, we're still getting some results from the elections, but you've got to be able to put this together on a pretty short deadline.
Yeah, it's always a challenge when we have an election year. We usually have just a couple of days after the election to, you know, get as many of those final results as we can. I think this year when we sort of cut it off and pressed the print button, there were still 12 House races outstanding, and of course the recounts going on in Florida and Georgia, and that was just, you know, a matter of rolling with the punches, putting it where we thought the race was going to go, where it was at the moment, and, you know, not making an official call, obviously, because, again, things were still up in the air.
That would be trouble. That would be fake news. Oh, I hate that phrase. I'm sorry.
It sure would.
what is the top story of the year for you guys?
Well, the election was still our top story in the past year. You know, there were a lot of things that happened in the election that were anticipated, but I think what no one really foresaw was just how high the turnout would be. We're talking record levels for a midterm election. In over 100 years, we haven't seen these kinds of numbers. So that was definitely something that we found significant. It's hard to get people to turn out and vote in an off year. So it was definitely something that we were paying a lot of attention to looking ahead to the election. And then once the numbers started coming in, we definitely thought that they told a story that we weren't anticipating.
Also, I think one of the big stories was immigration this year, and I know that got special attention from you in your statistical spotlight.
Yeah, you know, you hear a lot about immigration on the news, and certainly on TV, the images are very striking, very emotional, very heightened a lot of the time. And so we've decided to get down to the numbers. You know, what are the numbers of refugees and asylum seekers over the past 20, 30 years? What story did those facts tell? And I think that's something that gets lost a little bit when you're looking at, you know, the emotional angle or the political angle or, you know, the talking heads angles,
right,
on both sides of things.
I tell you,
just to have the numbers in front of you is a crucial thing.
You know, that is so valuable because our news comes to us, and, you know, I spend a lot of my time as a news anchor too, but our news comes to us so quickly and so sort of partially because, you know, we don't get a complete picture anymore because what we were putting in a newscast at 10 o'clock in the morning, we're probably not putting in at 2:30 or 3, you know, it goes that fast. And so we do lose an overall perspective. And so I love that idea of having a spot where you can sort of get statistics and a whole picture to put the emotion into some sort of perspective.
Absolutely. Take a pause and look at, you know, the facts behind the stories that maybe get lost in the shuffle because the footage you're watching is so compelling or because the debate that's happening is so polarized. We've got the background information that can make you informed when you're actually, you know, sitting and thinking about how you feel about an issue that's in the news.
All right. What's in your World Almanac Editor's Pick time capsule this year?
Oh, a lot of fun stuff. We've got some stuff from pop culture, as always. So, you know, you can have Meghan Markle's engagement ring, but also Pete and Ariana's engagement ring, if you like. We also have the more serious stories covered, some remnants of some of the wildfires and storms that we had in 2018, definitely covering all bases for the top news stories of the year.
It's the World Almanac for the 2019 edition coming out the next week, right? I think the publication date is early December.
Yes, you should be able to find a copy in stores really any day now, but the official on sale date is Tuesday, December 4th.
Listen, I was so happy to see the press release and to read about the World Almanac again. It brought back great memories for me and gave me a little kick, too. I need to pick one up because I did enjoy it so much. And I'm glad you're around. I'm glad you took the time to talk to us today very much. Sarah Jansen, Senior Editor of the World Almanac.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Okay, a little bit later in the program, we're going to talk to Mama Chef of MamaChef.com. It's a food blogger, and I was checking out some of her recipes and things like that a couple of weeks ago, and also got a notice that she is up and running. I believe she's up and running with a food kitchen, a soup kitchen, if you will. Maybe she has a better name for that. But she has started that from scratch, sort of an unusual startup for the Business Lunch. But we'll talk to her about that a little bit later in the program. Are you working on your taxes? I have to admit, I already have been looking at my taxes. And Lindsay Page Marcus is here. She's a principal at Chuhak and Texan to help us out with that. Lindsay, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so one of the big things I rail about this, and I really am just learning the benefits or the costs of this new tax bill, but, you know, we lost in Illinois the ability to write off our state and local taxes over $10,000, right?
Correct.
It's a big hit for a lot of people because this is a high state tax state. There's unlimited charitable contributions, unlimited to what, 60%?
60%.
So that means 60% of my income, I could never give more than that?
It's actually 60% of your adjusted gross income,
okay,
less any net operating losses that have been carried forward.
Yeah, I know this is Giving Tuesday, but that's not going to happen anymore.
You never know.
So, but we have a greater standard deduction.
Correct.
So the idea is there would be less incentive perhaps to donate to charities, or we would get maybe less of a benefit when it comes to taxes donating to charities because it would still be better for us to take the standard deduction.
To some extent, yes.
Okay.
I'd like to say that the romantic in me likes to believe that each and every one of us looks at charitable giving,
yeah,
not from a quantitative perspective, but from a qualitative perspective first and foremost. And my goal as part of this exercise is to really educate listeners on how by being a bit more strategic
right.
in how they make their charitable giving, that over time they can actually glean more benefits from the current tax structure.
I have charities that I care about and donate to and would regardless.
Mm-hmm.
I also make donations for the tax benefit. I do. I mean, I'm not, you know.
They're not mutually exclusive.
Right, right.
And as a tax practitioner, I understand that more than anyone.
Okay, so there is a way to sort of bunch our charitable giving from one year to the next that will allow us to take the deduction perhaps for one year and then not take it for the next, although we could spread out our charitable giving over both years.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly.
Explain that to me.
So,
and you might need charts for this.
No. I think you and your viewers are incredibly sharp. So this concept is that imagine that we are creating a charitable fund
mm-hmm.
or reserve that we're going to allocate a chunk of money to this year. And depending on how much cash flow someone can handle to do this with, it could be you could allocate enough money to cover this year and the next few years, or maybe this year and the next year in terms of your charitable giving. In prior years, individuals were required to form a family foundation in order to bunch or pool their assets in this way. But now we have this incredibly easy planning tool known as a donor advised fund,
mm-hmm.
which makes the process seamless for anyone.
So again, then I would, if I'm paying my taxes and I look at it and like, well, the standard deduction works for me this year. My charitable giving isn't enough for me to itemize this year. What I could do is say, but if I were to add the charity money I'm going to give next year to this year, that would put me over the hump. Then I could itemize, pay a lower tax bill this year.
You're exactly right. So let's walk through some numbers.
Okay.
So let's say we're dealing with a married couple. The standard deduction is $24,000. And as you mentioned previously, the IRS now creates a maximum amount that we can allocate to state and local taxes and property taxes of $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
You and I were discussing offline just before we got on the air that as Illinois residents, there's no question we're going to hit that $10,000 mark.
Right.
So this married couple has hit the $10,000 mark. Imagine this couple then plans to donate $14,000 in all of their cumulative charitable contributions this year. So the $10,000 plus the additional $14,000 would get them right in line with the $24,000 standard deduction.
So it's a wash.
It's a wash, exactly.
Right.
There's no harm, but there's also no benefit. So now, as you mentioned before, imagine instead that this married couple, instead of giving $14,000 directly to public charities, they allocated $28,000, so $14,000 for this year and $14,000 for next year, into something known as a donor advised fund, which really is just a fund or an account that can be that you use for your specific charitable giving.
So then this year you get the extra $14,000 write-off for your taxes.
Because we've surpassed the standard deduction of $24,000.
I have to physically take that money this year and put it into a fund.
Into a donor advised fund.
I can't swear I'm going
to
do it.
No. Okay. It needs to be totally above board.
and then over a period of time, under our example, the next year we would give that $14,000. We just wouldn't claim it on our taxes, and then we'd take the standard deduction.
You're exactly right. So this year we take advantage of the itemized deduction, and next year we get the standard deduction, but we've only really used $10,000 of the whole $24,000.
Okay, I was running this by a couple of people, and they said, oh, well, this is really for rich people. This is for the very rich.
You know, I think there's a misnomer in society that estate planning and tax planning is for the rich and famous. I would argue that us normal folk need it just as much as
I'm not that normal, just so you know.
Relatively speaking.
Thank you very much.
But us normal folk, we need these planning tools and these tax savings more and above and beyond what a wealthy person does. So let's say the married couple that we were talking about wasn't planning on donating $14,000 this year, but maybe they were planning on donating $5,000 this year. To the extent that the couple could accomplish and could handle the cash
Set
flow by
aside.
Setting the money aside in this donor advised fund, you still get the tax savings
so
over time.
So the donor advised fund, those are existing elsewhere, or would I create it for myself?
So typically, you would create it for yourself.
Okay.
Many broker-dealers, including Wintrust, offers a wonderful donor-advised fund platform. But I think many of the clients that I've worked with and many of the donors that I've encountered are also surprised to learn that nonprofits such as the Chicago Community Trust and the Jewish United Fund offer this platform for donors.
And then if I use their platform, do I control where the charity goes?
Technically, under the IRS law, if you open up this donor advised fund, you are the donor advisor.
I see. Okay.
So you can advise. There's no requirement for them to follow it, so to speak. But from a public policy perspective, to the extent that the supporting organization managing this doesn't follow what it is, where you want these grants
That'd
or distributions to be made, it would be very, very bad.
How many people are doing this?
I'm hoping that we're going to make some waves this afternoon.
Yeah.
I think like anything else and with the tax code and the complexities, I think it's a function of education. I'm hoping more and more will.
We have to run. And because I think a lot of us are going to learn about the tax bill only when we pay our taxes.
Exactly.
Next. So if we're in the situation right now, we've got 5-6 weeks left. How do we determine whether this works for us?
I think you can sit down with your CPA, your investment advisor, have them run some preliminary numbers and it's opening up a fund is incredibly easy. So I'm encouraging clients to open up something now as soon as possible and then talk to their advisors in terms of how much to allocate to the funds.
Lindsay Marcus is a principal at Chuhak & Texan. Thanks very much for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. We've all seen those electric vehicles on the roads like Teslas, Chevy Volts, and Nissan Leafs, just to name a few. But soon, we could see an all-electric truck that was built right here in good old Illinois. It comes from the company Rivian and showed itself at the LA Auto Show going on right now, and they plan to build themselves up with this electric truck and the SUV. And if you aren't drinking the electric vehicle Kool-Aid, the perks behind them is their efficiency and, of course, environmental friendliness. For example, the truck, called the R1T, gets over 400 miles on a single charge and will have additional charging options for consumers. And speaking of consumers, we now live in a world where if you want to buy a personalized video from a super famous celebrity, just pull out your credit card. Chicago-based Cameo is an app that allows you to purchase a video for yourself or others detailing a personalized message, and depending on level of fame, these videos can range from $5 to $1,000 each. That's the best 30 seconds of work any celebrity could do, if you ask me. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. All right, I know most of you are having your lunch. I usually grab mine right after the show, and I'm hungrier than normal because my computer is up at mamachef.com. And the Mama Chef is on the phone line. Karen Nakamowski joins us. Karen, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve, for having me.
Okay, so I want to talk to you for a variety of reasons, but let's just start with mamachef.com, this food blog that
Sure.
you started how long ago?
I started it about 2 years ago. I love cooking. I'm always sharing my recipes, so I thought it would be fun to create a blog that would help busy parents serve a meal, but I wanted these to be easy, and I wanted them to be kid-friendly. So I made the blog, all of my recipes being 6 ingredients in under 6 minutes prep time, which means they're quick, easy, and they're great for those that are just learning how to cook.
I know that that's very attractive to people in my house. If you can keep it to 6 ingredients or 5 ingredients, you're doing very well.
I'm sure.
Is this a hobby or is this a business for you?
So it is a business. Mm-hmm. I do work with a lot of different brands, and I put their products, I create recipes using their products. Since I've started the soup kitchen, which I know we'll touch upon
Sure.
in a minute, that's kind of taken a back seat because I focused on that, but it is a business for me.
I see. Okay, so that makes sense. I'm looking at the site and I don't see ads, but what you're doing is you're cooking with a particular peanut butter or things like that, Jif, and Jif's pictures are on the website.
Exactly. They're all sponsored posts.
So we go from there to opening up a soup kitchen. I was kind of joking earlier. We talk a lot about tech startups on this show, but not charitable startups so much. You're up and running. You started in October. Tell me where the idea came from, and I want to know how it's going.
Sure. So my blog grew fast, I think, because it has that six under six and was so attractive to people that within the 2 years, you know, I have around 80,000 followers. I write for dozens of magazines and online publications. And really, if someone had told me 2 years ago when I started this that I'd be where I am now with the blog, I wouldn't have believed it.
Right.
I would have thought I would have been ecstatic. But honestly, with all of this, I just wasn't feeling fulfilled. I really kept feeling like there was a bigger purpose for creating the blog.
And that led you to, you don't live in West Rogers Park, do you?
I don't. Right. I don't. I live in the suburbs, fortunately, in my area, there's not such a need, and I knew there was a need, as I head a little bit further south towards the city.
Right.
I've always been involved in soup kitchens, delivering food to those in need. So really, when I thought of the idea of taking Mama Chef in more of a philanthropic path and starting a soup kitchen, it was kind of that, like, aha moment, where I really knew that this was the bigger purpose for my creating the blog.
So are you doing, and it's with the Congregation KINS, is that, am I pronouncing that correctly?
It is, yeah, it's Congregation KINS. I had really, it was just, I sent an email, I looked online, I tried to find, places that have, have large spaces to accommodate this. And
so you didn't know about them, or you didn't know them well when you started
it? I didn't.
Ah, interesting.
No, I didn't. I sent out a couple emails to different synagogues in the area. I had been involved with one in Evanston called Beth Emmett. It's a synagogue that has a weekly soup kitchen on Wednesday evenings, an amazing program. So I had met with them, and they were wonderful. They kind of said, good luck doing this on your own. There's five of us, and it's a full-time job.
And so you're up and running. You started, I guess, up and running 5 or 6 weeks or so. How is it going?
It's wonderful. We started it. I started planning it about 3 months ago, right when I met with Rabbi Matanky. Within a week, I was meeting with the president of the synagogue, and everyone was very excited. It really went fast. I started fundraising.
One night a week, right? One meal?
One night a week. It's every Tuesday night. So what we do is volunteers come at 4:30. And we need over 600 volunteers a year. Mm-hmm. They come at 4:30, and from right when they get there, I have them start cooking. I have all the recipes made. We also have children who are downstairs making the lunches. We serve them a 5-course homemade meal. We also give them seconds, usually to-go containers to go, and also we provide them with lunches that they take for the next day.
What have your numbers been like?
When we started out, I've said everything went off without a hitch. Really, it's just been in terms of fundraising, in terms of getting volunteers. Our volunteer list is, pretty much, we're pretty much packed for the next 6 months. The only thing that was, I wasn't patiently waiting for was the crowds, because we had this beautiful room set up, and we started at about 60, and last week we were full. We had about 95 people come, and it was just wonderful and beautiful, and it was a really nice evening.
I'm sure that the word is spreading, because I would imagine the food and the generosity and the love is great there too. It's a great story. I wish you continued success. I know you can use, I'm sure, donations as well, and I would send people to your website, mamachef.com, to find out more information about that.
And what I do want to mention is, there's many wonderful charities out there. What's different about our soup kitchen is there's absolutely no overhead. Mm-hmm. There's no administrative costs. I donate all my time to run the soup kitchen. It's all run on volunteers, Congregation KINS. We partner with them. They're generously allowing us to use their beautiful space. So every single donation that we receive goes directly to feeding those in need.
That's Karen Nakamowski. The name of the site is mamachef.com. Karen, thanks for joining us, and I wish you great success.
Thank you for having me.